Best thing. Lay it on me, Tess.
I saw Interstellar last night, and I loved it. I think it's been getting kind of mixed reviews, but visually it was so stunning, and it kind of heads into that, like, heady space-time thing.
Theoretical world.
Yeah, fifth dimension stuff, which normally isn't my fave in movies. We've talked about that before. But, yeah, it was beautiful, and I recommend.
IMAX or regular?
Regular. IMAX makes me have nausea.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. What
Shelby?
About you?
I put up Christmas lights yesterday.
Yeah.
It was after work and it was really late, and my roommate got home after I put them up, which was really late. Anyway, so she comes home and ran into my room at like 1 a.m. Shelby, oh my God, so cute.
Did you put
them it was pretty fun.
Up outside?
No, I put them up in our apartment. And then left them on so she could see them.
Sure.
And now we've turned them off because you should not have Christmas lights on before December.
That's
ever.
Fair.
But you're prepared.
We are prepared.
I walked into Target the other day and it had skipped Thanksgiving completely.
Oh, yeah.
Not that there are really Thanksgiving things to sell, but it just, it went.
But it's not
it
Christmas
was, and
season.
It was the day after Halloween, too.
It is not the Christmas season right now. That's not what it is.
Well, tell that to the people who are waiting in line at Best Buy in California. I saw that story today.
Oh,
there are people
man.
Who are already lining up for Black Friday. And I was,
what?
Yeah,
in California.
She wants the TV real bad.
You could work a day and a half and it would pay the difference of a discount like that.
Well, that's just how life is in California.
All right. And what about you, Alex?
I am taking a six-week night class, screen printing class at the Minnesota Center for Book Arts.
Yeah.
And last week we had our first class and I made my first piece of art probably since like high school or something like that. Yeah. And I just screen printed a little cardinal that I cut out of like wax paper stencils.
Cool.
It's like a little three color dude. So I'm going to go back tonight to Open Studio and make some more little screen printed birds.
I am so excited for you.
You guys, I'll make a bunch and you can have some. I'll just
Christmas
distribute
presents.
Them. Yeah, exactly. I can make my own cards or something.
Perfect.
So that's my best thing.
So that's not all we have to talk about today. What's going on?
Well, I saw an article today about a book that I read a long time ago and then borrowed to my friends, and it's called The Defining Decade. It's by Meg Jay, Dr. Meg Jay, and it's kind of about like your 20s and how they're really important and everybody thinks that they're not really important and stuff like that.
That's very heady. I want to talk about music.
Great.
Then it's a plan.
Easy.
We
enough.
Can make that happen.
All right.
I'm Tess Weinberg.
I'm Shelby Thomason.
And I'm Alex Goderud. Let's pop till we drop.
When I was kind of browsing through news articles this week, I stumbled on one that was talking about The Defining Decade, which is a book that was written by Meg Jay, and it's kind of about how, like, your 20s matter.
Contrary to popular belief.
Contrary to popular belief. And the article was, like, I think an interview with Meg, talking about, like, why she wrote the book and, you know, kind of what it is in a nutshell. And I had a friend actually recommend the book to me because at the time I had just graduated from school. And he had just graduated from school, and we both had full-time jobs that we, you know, really didn't like that much. And they weren't bad jobs. They were just, we just didn't like them.
Unfulfilling.
Yeah. And the book is kind of about how, like, your 20s are you setting yourself up for the rest of your life. Like, the most important things that will ever happen to you are most likely going to happen in your 20s. And, like, not the most important things, but, like, I think it's the stat is, like, 70% of your defining moments of your life are going to happen in this decade, and how that's like incredibly important because those are going to influence what happens to you and your career choices and your living choices, and like all those things that you decide now will affect you later on. And it won't be like for better or worse. I mean, it's not like everybody who doesn't have a job right as they step out of school is not going to fail for the rest of their lives, obviously.
I have the quotes, okay, or the numbers, if anyone's curious.
We are.
Yeah.
So it says, we know that 80% of life's most defining moments happen by age 35. We know that 70% of lifetime wage growth happens in the first 10 years of a career. We know that more than half of Americans are married or living with or dating their future partner by 30. Our personalities change more in our 20s than any other time. Our fertility peaks. Our brain caps off its last growth spurts. The things that we do and the things that we don't do are going to have an enormous effect across years and even generations.
And it's hard because I have friends who hated that book because a lot of it was about get a job, you know, or like do
Can
something
I just say
important.
Something?
Which I don't think is true. Like, I'm not standing up for the book or, like, you know, not standing up for the book. It was nice for me to read.
It was
because,
a thought starter.
I work 12 hours a day, and it sucks a lot, and, like, it's not a good thing for my life because I'm 22 now. I'm not 18, and I think, like, the more you kill yourself, the cooler you are, because, like, that's not true. But, like, it was kind of nice to have, like, someone tell me, you should do that, even though I know it's like not really true.
Well, I mean, it's true depending on the person. Like, I think people's qualms, or at least my personal take on a book like that, is that it's like a self-help book for people who don't really know what they want, and it's someone telling them maybe for the first time that
there are
that's
limits,
not okay, or like, well, you should try to figure out what you want, which is great. I think that, you know, in general in life, that's what it is, right? Like, people are trying to figure out what they want to do. But I think that people are critical of the book because it presents success or our futures, like a perception of success in a very singular way, like in a very career-driven way, where I feel like our generation doesn't necessarily see success as, well, I need to make as much money my first year out of college because that's setting myself up for success. Like, that's not necessarily...
In a very old-fashioned worldview, too. I mean, all those statistics that we just heard are very true about, you know, 50% of people are with their partner or future spouse or whatever by age 30
of the previous generation,
right? And
not
and,
our
and people are, but it's pointing toward like an idealized state of being that's not necessarily true for people of our generation anymore.
Right.
People don't feel the need to have met their partner by age 30, or, you know, definitions of marriage and partnership kind of change over time. People are less concerned about earning wages, maybe because, you know, it's harder to earn, you know, make more money now, just the way the economy is and the way the sort of system works or whatever. Wage growth is
like,
decreasing.
You know, freelance and entrepreneurial like expeditions are much more encouraged now for our generation. So being hired right out of college isn't a lot of people that I know, that's not their goal. That's not what they want to do. It's more, you know, figuring it out and creating. I mean, obviously that's idealized in its own way, but like, I was reading some of the comments. Actually, it was on an NPR News article.
It was.
Just kind of, you know, people's perceptions of the book, and people ranging from, you know, freshly out of college to 65 and how they felt about the book. And I think the general reaction was that it's a singular view at what success is.
I mean, I agree with the basic premise of the book that, like, you cannot just screw around in your 20s and do nothing and expect to suddenly just turn 30 and pick it up, you know? Or you're just picking up the pieces doesn't necessarily happen, even though everyone is free to pursue whatever definition of happiness
and
is,
like, what
works for them.
And what you're saying screwing around is, like, to some people, screwing around is different.
That's very true. Okay. Taking it back a notch, screwing around is maybe the wrong phrase to use.
Speaking of
literally screwing around, the line in that quote about just the sentence that this is supposed to speak volumes, our fertility peaks, The world does not need more children, okay? And I think people of our generation recognize that humans don't need to have children. And I think that the reason this book makes me a little, you know, I don't know what the term would be. I'm just a little angry at this book, even though it's presenting very good research, just because the definition of happiness, according to Meg Jay, is having children, making money, being married.
Okay, wait, guys.
And that is not at all
Did you read the
what
book?
I want. We read the synopsis online.
Exactly. Okay, so I agree with, like, the singular worldview, because, like, she kind of does. But at some point in the book, she also says, like, it's, you know, maybe you don't want a career. Like, maybe what you want is a family. And so your 20s is about figuring that out and discovering, like, I want a family, not a career. Or I want a career, not a family. Or I want to travel. I don't want necessarily a career or a family. I just want to fund the travel.
Sure.
Like, it's discovering, like, what you want versus...
But I think, like, planning all that stuff out is just... kind of ridiculous. Like, you think, like, you should just...
I don't think it's about planning it out.
But
I think
figuring
it's about,
it out, like, 10 years in advance? Like, but life doesn't work like that. You don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now.
She makes a good argument for, I guess, being aware of possibilities. And I think the operative phrase she wanted to emphasize was, our personalities change more in our 20s than... in any other decade of our lives. Now, I don't know how you quantify a change in personality, but I could imagine at my current age, any number of desirable life outcomes that I want to happen. You know, by the time I'm 30, I do want to have traveled a lot. I want to have been creative. I want to have, you know, had a positive impact on people around me. But maybe by the time I'm 29, it will literally just be get married and have kids or something. I don't know. I'm not really one to speak because I'm already, like, down the path. Like, I already own a house. Like, they've already got me, you know? So, yeah. So I'm on the way. I just want to keep my mind open to other possibilities that aren't economic based. I don't know. I mean, my whole goal in the next, you know, 6 or 7 years of my life is to do things that are not motivated by economic reasons. Mm-hmm. Although Meg Jay would say that all of a sudden when I do turn 31 or whatever, if I haven't thought about economics at all, then I'm in trouble, you
and
know?
You're screwed.
Yeah. And then I'll have a very fun 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s through to my eventual demise. It'll be very fun.
I think it is interesting that one of the comments on the article about the book was it's asking the hard-hitting questions that these young people don't want to hear because they're too hard or too difficult or too stressful to think about. And I think that that's true. And I think those questions being present is is probably a good thing because we've talked about before, like our generation's dependence on our parents and like how long is that going to go for, you know? So thinking about, you know, maybe finding that independence is a good thing, or thinking about the ways that that can work. I just don't think that the only way for something like that to work is through traditional means of success, I guess. But I don't think what she's doing
start,
is bad.
Though.
I think
it's a good start.
It's good. And, like, it's well-intentioned.
Yeah, just like a lot. I mean, like the feminist thing that we talked about before, where like a lot of celebrities are doing like these feminist things. And like, granted, sometimes they fall short because they generalize too much or, you know, they got one part wrong or something like that. But it is a good step towards this grander goal that we have, which is like understanding our generation and the world that we live in now, which is way different than Meg Jay's. Yeah. Generation or our parents' generation or like how, you know, even our professors are telling us how the world works, which is not true anymore.
I mean I'm a few years into my 20s and, you know, I haven't really had a plan, but I've learned so much, and to some people maybe some of it could be called screwing around or messing up or whatever, but I've learned so much about myself not having a plan and not knowing what I want. And I think that that's an okay way to go about it too, being like, you should skip all this time in your 20s being confused and really just go for what you think you'll want in 10 years. Like, what about all that learning time that takes place? Like, what about all the development and the messing up? And The people who have really impacted our generation weren't people who had traditional jobs. So by encouraging this whole demographic of people mm-hmm. to go out and get jobs and build families in that way, it's like, okay, well, it's not the huge buildings of people who are working in offices that are making the difference. It's the guy who created, like, the Tinder app. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know why it's important to encourage that form of success when that's really not what's shaping our generation. It's the outliers sure. that are really shaping our culture.
That may be true. I think she's coming at it from the perspective of maintaining and growing, like, the whole of the system, which does require a lot of old school traditional skills. Not that that is a good thing. I'm not defending
that.
Well,
I think it's like, also that sounds so boring to me. Like,
I think it's also hard to encourage everybody to be an outlier, though. Because,
sure.
like, by definition, not everybody can be that. Yeah.
Right. I totally get that. But I think
I think
encourage success on a mediocre scale is, like, the wrong way to go about
setting sights lower is a really depressing thing for any author to do. And that's totally biased by my life experiences too. I know people who are, you know, married young, have a very, very stable job young, and are very happy with that sort of lot in life. And I don't know if we're approaching it from what we consider the outside.
I just don't think that people should get stressed out about trying to achieve that. Like,
fair enough. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's great. If that, because whatever. Anyone who wants to do anything, that's great, and you yep. should do that. I'm not here to judge. I don't really care. I just think it's strange to get stressed out about that mm-hmm. way of life.
Well, I think that she's asking that and, like, bringing it up because, at least when I was growing up, I was always told that, like, I don't have to do that. And, like, I'm a star. I'm special. Mm. I'm unique. I am going to be the outlier. And so I think she's kind of, like, the response to that worldview of like everyone is unique because everybody is unique, but like
she's putting the rails on a little bit
and defining the boundaries. I think it's a matter of like combining those two worldviews of like maybe I am unique and like I should try to do this entrepreneur thing or this art thing or like do those things, but also, you know, have thought about like just getting a job with a company or. Mm-hmm.
But to the people that she's talking to, the demographic that she's talking to, it's not just getting a job with a company. Like, we're talking about it from the standpoint of settling. But the people that she's targeting, that's the aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's, I think that...
Well, I think she's saying that, like, that could be an aspiration. And she's saying
absolutely.
It in a way that, like,
it is
this
aspiration.
Is the aspiration.
Yeah.
Because nobody else has said, this is the aspiration. Because all we ever hear is, like, messages from that movie, like, The Office.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think as like an employer, like if I was going to hire, in my dream world, if I had this great, fabulous company. All right, here we go. We're playing. If I had this company and there was someone who was 30 years old and like had some weird life experiences and didn't necessarily know exactly what they wanted, but tried a bunch of different stuff and learned a lot of random stuff and could, you know, like serve tables and knows really good customer service and knows how to problem solve really quickly and knows all these things that, you know, make a really good, interesting, employable person, or someone fresh out of college who was wearing the right uniform and has a great printed resume. Like, I'm going to take the person
because that person has experience. She's saying get experiences.
But
and like they should be work experiences and travel experiences and life experiences, but like get them.
Yeah,
don't
but she's
just
saying
like
it with like
have
a very
fun.
Intentioned view. And I'm saying like you got to mess up somewhere along the way. Like you have to fail to know what it's like and then to move on from that. Like someone who's like walking on eggshells their entire life because they're trying to fall into this idea of what success is, like that does not interesting human make.
I wonder if this advice she has written in her book will remain relevant in 5 to 10 years, because I think it's safe to say that we came of age, specifically in high school, in one of the last generations before super intense college prep became sort of a normal thing for people at a younger age. My college prep started my junior year of high school when it was time to apply to go to college. There was no tutoring. There was no standardized testing practice. And, you know, ever since I was in high school, you hear stories about, my kid is in preschool, he's five,
yeah,
and he's already being made aware of what college is, and he has to get into the right, he has to get into the right high school, and then he has to get into the right, you know, college prep program, and then he has to get into the right college, and then the right career, that kind of thing. There is that element of a generation who are maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 years younger than we are. And I wonder if that sort of very track-driven, aspirational, goalposty kind of thing is going to continue for those kids when they get out of college.
Yeah.
I think they'll probably know exactly what they want to do. I wonder if there will be...
I think that'll spiral out of control, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I think
they'll actually grow, like, their own brain.
I wonder if that'll be
the... that's not what they wanted.
Sure. If that'll be the next generation after millennial will be the kids who are robotically groomed for college and are just masters of life.
Yeah.
So
oh
we'll be these weird slackers
and
who are a little older.
And we'll all have no jobs. No jobs for all of us.
Guys, we're screwed.
Going back to Tess's point, though, I think not having a plan is... Not having a plan, but being okay with traditional measures of success that pop up, like getting a job or graduating from college or, you know, buying a house or getting married, whatever. I think it's fine to encounter them organically. And if you aspire to them, great. But not having a plan, like you were saying, Tess, is smart. It's just like live your life.
So just go with the flow in your defining decade, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
I think you can like go with the flow and have intentions to like do what you want to do, but not shape them in artificial ways to have a means of traditional success.
Fair enough.
That's how I feel.
We tackle a lot of very important issues on this show, but it's worth noting that we all come from a musical background and have a rich musical history, and we haven't talked about music in a while, and I think we should do a little of that. And I'm just going to throw it out there. What has been working for me lately is a record from 2013 by John Hopkins. He's a British electronic musician, keyboardist, composer. The record is called Immunity. Winter is the time when I really get down with instrumental, semi-ambient electronic music, just because there's a very specific quality of winter night air after a snowfall that lends itself to headphones, loud electronic music, and just walking around. Maybe not the safest thing in the world, but fun. This record is, what are some words I would use to describe it? Icy, yet warm, yet kind of rhythmic. It's got, so John Hopkins has been a solo composer. He has done stuff for Coldplay. He has done stuff for Brian Eno. It just feels like you're in a lukewarm, like a sensory deprivation tank, just a warm bath of water throughout the course of this record. There are some songs that are very ambient, kind of Aphex Twin-y piano pieces. There are some crazy odd time signature club bangers. On like a really bassy set of headphones or in your car, it's really a wonderful record. And it's just great driving music. I discovered it's great gym music. It's great walking around music.
I actually listened to the whole album on my drive here today, and it was perfect because little snow on the ground, kind of quiet roads. It was like
it has a cinematic quality to it. And he had previously done some soundtrack work, and it just has kind of retained this very picturesque. I mean, I'm describing it totally in like setting real world terms, and that I don't know speaks volumes about the sort of time and place feeling that it inspires. And I'm just digging it. It's really making winter an easy transition, because now I can't listen to anything with words in it, because words make me sad, and I'm already sad enough in the winter. So it's like all my Leonard Cohen, nope. All my Nick Cave, nope. Instrumental. So John Hopkins, Immunity.
I rediscovered an album yesterday. A local album. And so, okay, backtrack a little bit. When I was a sophomore at the University of Minnesota, today I started volunteering at Radio K.
Oh, nice.
And
wow.
It totally expanded my world on local music. Mm-hmm. Not to plug Radio K, but that's just that situation.
We can plug Radio K.
So the first album that I had to review for like the music volunteering program was Lucy Michelle and the Velvet Lapels.
That
album seriously like got me through winter that year.
Sure.
For a whim, but meant to come and live with him on Fridays and bless. Played the flute, the bard now joined him on a lute on top of the scavatory was frequently where they had tea.
It's interesting because I also think it could be kind of a summery pop album, but she has almost like a cold quality to her voice, not in a negative way, but it has like a very like
crisp
sound to it. And yesterday when I was working at a coffee shop, it came on and I have been listening nonstop. It's totally just revived that whole experience to me.
What album was it?
It's Orange Peels and Rattlesnakes.
Oh yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Try some peach candy. Oh, it's pretty sweet. So I think you'd like it, cause you're really neat. What do you say to coming over today? We could lay on my roof and look up at the moon.
It's funny how those albums can kind of come back at you.
And Lucy Michelle does a show at the theater every February for Valentine's Day. Which I think she's also very good for. And so that's an argument for Lucy Michelle in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah, very,
she
very...
She has a show every winter.
Very strong wintry feelings. And, like, it's very warm music, too. Kind of makes you feel good inside.
It's a contrast.
It's like a hottie toddy in an album.
Yeah.
And my memory of Lucy Michelle is always, like, the Cedar Cultural Center, which is a very warm place, not only because they didn't have air conditioning at the time, but, like, my memory of being at the Cedar is, like, being warm, being bundled up. Lucy Michelle, it's a good connection. So it was playing at the coffee shop or, like, on your shuffle?
No, it was playing at the coffee shop, and now it's
What
been
shop
playing.
Was it?
It's called 5 Watt Coffee Shop.
Heard of it.
Yeah, 38th and Nicollet.
That's new.
And it's new, and they play the best music. So, you know.
They have the oatmeal bar, don't they?
Yeah, so it's like called Sunday Service. I told my friend I was going, and she thought I was going to church.
Church, ha.
That's such a great...
I realized that we just all had that
reason to do that, yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
So I've listened to the radio a lot, and the two songs that have kept coming on are, and they're actually pretty similar. One's kind of old, arguably, and the other one's pretty new. One is from Belle and Sebastian called The Party Line.
How did I get here? I heard the rumor from your girlfriend's sister that you knew me, and you end up dancing closer to me.
Belle and Sebastian kind of got me through high school, so it's so fun for me when their new songs come out, because that's like, oh man, I liked it when I was 16 and I like it still now.
Nice.
Even though like maybe I wouldn't, because they're not really like anything else that I would generally listen to except for Courtney Barnett, and people have argued with me about how they sound similar. I think that they sound similar and no one else does apparently, but that's fine. But Courtney Barnett came out with a song, I think it's called, like, Pickles in a Jar. And I love her. I don't really know why, because, again, not really like anything else I ever really listened to.
I say dance, you say dance. I say friends, you say France. You're from Adelaide, I'm from Hobart.
she's like very apathetic about everything. Mm-hmm. And like you can hear it.
Sure.
I think.
Stream of consciousness.
Yeah. But I really like it. I don't, they're both pretty catchy. I mean, I guess I wouldn't like prescribe them for the winter season, but it happens to be winter now, and I guess I'm
and
gonna piggyback.
Yeah.
I'm gonna piggyback off of what you said about how it's like a good contrast to like the coldness of
sure.
the season, because they're both poppy and warm.
Let's throw in a curveball here. Mm-hmm. What are some of, and this doesn't have to be like your absolute favorite, but like what are some of your favorite winter songs to listen to in winter? Not songs about okay. winter, but like your favorite, like what memories
Ooh.
Come up?
Fleet Foxes, White Winter Hymnal.
Okay.
Oh my God, that song just yeah. like hits you and then keeps going. It's mm-hmm. crazy. Mm-hmm. It's so stunning.
Nice.
I really like M. Ward in the
sure.
winter.
Mm-hmm. There was one year that the big three record Joanna Newsom album
oh,
came
yeah.
out, and that was
oh, yeah.
I'm not a, I yeah. I will say here I'm not a Joanna Newsom fan, but there was the one, the Good Intentions Paving Company song mm-hmm. on there was such a like winter crusher. I was really
I
into that one.
I love Joanna Newsom.
Oh,
the new Hailey Boner
mm-hmm.
album
yeah.
is insane.
Mm.
My friend just got it on vinyl, and it's like, it sounds
She's like very,
so
yes.
good.
She sounds very good in winter.
So good in winter.
I think the other thing that I really like to listen to in winter is like older music and especially jazz. So like mm. every weekend when I'm home, if I wake up like early enough where it's not really light out yet, I'll start jazz music and then I'll just play it for as long as I'm home. So if that's all day, then like I play it all day because
mm-hmm.
It just, I don't know, it just sounds good. It's like so reminiscent of a childhood I didn't have because my parents didn't listen to jazz. But like I put it on and I always like want to tell somebody like, oh yeah, you know, every Sunday my family listened to jazz. Like
it's just such
it's
a
just,
wonderful
just not
tradition.
True.
Yeah.
But
oh,
like,
man.
You know.
That's
I think
pretty
the,
incredible.
The best part. Okay, so, you know, we've had our first snowfall now, and everyone's kind of, like, settling into the reality that this, like, doom is coming, right? But mm-hmm. it there's less light and less noise because the snow muffles noise, right? And so it kind of opens up our other senses to respond to things. And I think that's why music is just, like, so, can be so powerful mm-hmm. in the winter. And it's, I don't know, I'm kind of excited to
yeah.
see what else we can stumble upon.
I have to admit, this past weekend, and I don't normally watch movies at home. I don't watch too many movies or too much TV when I'm at home. But this past weekend, I watched four or five movies
oh my
and
gosh.
Just like hours of TV. And it was
oh,
just because
man.
It was just because I knew the snow was coming, and then the snow did come, and I was like, I can't go outside. What am I going to do? Catch up on all these great movies that I didn't want to watch because mentally I was still holding on to summer.
Right. Now
so,
we're here.
So I can't wait to get into all
What's
this.
What's the best one that you saw?
Under the Skin, the Scarlett Johansson
oh, yeah.
kind of
oh, sure.
creepy, sexy alien
yeah.
movie from last year. It is so good. It's incredible. It was
she
stunning.
She is the creepy, sexy alien.
She is the creepy,
oh,
sexy
yeah,
alien.
Oh, yeah. Done. Sold.
Man-eater. Redbox it. It's
Perfect.
Incredible. So we can discuss this at a future date, but I think the same effect will hold true for music. I'm just going to want to sit inside and let my ears run free. So here's to a good winter of music, everyone.